Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Haiti, rebel gang leaders in the northern city of Gonaïves are threatening today to take their revolt to the rest of Haiti. Haiti's embattled president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, is struggling to keep his grip on a country diplomats describe as on the brink of civil war. Anti-government militants are demanding his resignation, but Aristide says he will not step down until his term ends in 2006, and Washington says it will not step in. At least 50 people have been killed in fighting in Haiti since September. Haitian streets have seen huge opposition rallies. Haiti leads the Americas in AIDS, malnutrition, and infant mortality. 80% of its 7.5 million people live in poverty. The history of Haiti, which January 1st celebrated its bicentennial as an independent black republic, is one of upheaval and violence. Aristide was elected in 1990, toppled in a military coup 9 months later, put back in power by U.S. troops in 1994, and served until 96. He was reelected in 2000. Tonight on Point, Haiti on the verge of coming undone. We begin in Haiti. Tim Colley is covering the story there for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He joins me now from Port-au-Prince. Good evening and welcome, Tim Colley.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Tim. What's the situation in the capital city today? Over the past few days, we've read of attempted opposition rallies that were beaten back sometimes by thugs, sometimes by police. Is it quiet today? What's going on?
Yeah, the capital city is very quiet, actually very busy. Its streets are full with the usual traffic and that. So there's been no problems here today. Elsewhere in the country, there's a potentially dangerous development for the government, and that is a police garrison in the central plateau city of Hinch was attacked earlier today, and several policemen, including the regional commander, were reported to be killed.
Tim, what is the sense? We read people talking about Haiti being in chaos, on the verge of civil war. What's your sense on the ground in Port-au-Prince? Do you have that feeling in the capital, or is it in outlying cities? Where's the edge of this conflict?
You don't have the feeling in the capital. You don't get the feeling until perhaps maybe 2 hours outside the capital when you're traveling toward Gonaïves and you get to a city called St. Mark. Then you begin to see barricades. There's been about 20 killed in that city in the last week, though it still is under government control as of tonight. The sense here is more toward chaos than something so orderly as a civil war, because the government seems to be fighting a number of rebellions. These groups are loosely linked at best, that have overthrown several towns in the northwest and in the major city of Gonaïves. And they don't seem to be linked at all to the sort of organized, peaceful opposition here in the capital city.
Can you describe for us, Tim, how the population breaks down in terms of supporting Aristide or supporting the opposition? Is it by economic class, by region? You tell us.
I would say as of now it's by economic class. But the truth is people really don't know, because there are no polls in this country. You got 80% of people living on less than a dollar a day. About 60% of the country lives in the countryside, which is really unconnected at all to the central city. There's no very good roads. There's no health care per se, except from church groups and private charities. These people really live in the 19th century.
I'm sorry, Tim, when you say that it may be by economic class, even though you don't have the polls to prove that, who's supporting whom? Is it the elites who are now opposed to Aristide, or is it the impoverished?
Well, again, it's multiple opposition. In the capital city, there is a organized civic opposition that is primarily, I would say, middle class and elite led by a number of prominent business leaders here, also ex-members of Jean-Bertrand Aristide's political party. Elsewhere in the country, you have a rebellion that's basically, in Gonaïves, being led by former Lavalas thugs known as Chimère who have turned against Aristide.
Lavalas being Aristide's party. Lavalas.
Yeah. However, in the last couple of days, they apparently, in Gonaïves at least, have linked up with members of the old military and some very questionable characters aligned with a group called FRAP that was linked to hundreds of deaths here during the military-led government of the early 90s.
Tim, is there a sense that Aristide could be gone in days, weeks, months, or is he hanging in?
There's a sense that he's hanging in, that he's weathered, at least for now, I would say. The predominant sense is that he has good control over the capital city, he has decent control over St. Mark, and that he can weather the storm for weeks, if not months. That said, however, the country is effectively divided in half if this central town of Hinche has fallen tonight. Because that cuts off the main roads to the north from the south, where the capital is located.
After Aristide was thrown out in a coup in 1991, over the next 3 years, 70,000 Haitians set sail, many of them aiming for the United States. Most ended up intercepted, and many at Guantanamo. Is there any hint that Haitians may be looking to bail out in large numbers as a result of this chaos, Tim?
There's no sign yet. What you would look for typically in some of the fishing towns is boat building, and I haven't seen any sign of that. I've been looking for it and talking to people about it. So that hasn't happened yet.
And what about signals from other Latin American countries, Caribbean countries, from Washington? Are they getting signals in Port-au-Prince one way or another? Is the outside world making a difference in Haiti right now in any direction?
The outside world is trying to make a difference. There is a plan put forward by the Caribbean countries known as CARICOM that calls on Aristide and the opposition, primarily, though, Aristide, to take some confidence-building measures. That is taking steps to rein in these thugs known as Chimère, giving the opposition more leeway to march, and sitting down and forming an election council to hold elections for parliament perhaps later this year. Though it has to be said, the opposition here, the organized civic opposition, refuses to sit down with Mr. Aristide because they say he's broken numerous promises in the past. So you kind of are at a stalemate despite the best efforts of a lot of diplomats.
And there is no parliament. Why not?
There's no parliament because there were no elections, which should have been scheduled for late last year. And so parliament basically went defunct at the beginning of this year. And the president's effectively ruling by decree.
Why is that? Why doesn't he stand up for more democratic process?
Well, he says he is standing up for more democratic process. Again, there has been a stalemate with the opposition groups. They refuse to come to the table and talk to him. And if you talk to a lot of diplomats who have been dealing, this has been a part of a three-year process mm-hmm. since some questionable elections in 2000, they'll tell you there's sort of a pox on both houses here. Aristide definitely has control over these violent groups, and he is the head of the government. But they will tell you that the opposition is intransigent and hasn't really worked on forming a strong grassroots base. So it's very questionable that they would ever beat him in a straight-up election here.
A pox on both houses from diplomats there. Tim Colley, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Tim Colley is covering Haiti for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He joined us from Port-au-Prince. Are you following the upheaval in Haiti? Does the United States have a responsibility to get involved here, or should it keep out? Do you blame Aristide for the chaos? And why is Haiti stuck in these cycles of upheaval? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Charlottesville, Virginia, is Robert Faton. He's professor and chair in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia and author of Haiti's Predatory Republic, The Unending Transition to Democracy. Good evening and welcome, Professor Faton.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. You're I'm sure, watching with great interest what's going on in Haiti. Do some interpretation for us. What's going on down there?
Well, basically, I think what you have now is an extreme polarization, which is aggravated by the emergence of those armed forces in Gonaïves. Because initially what you had was a fairly civil opposition which was determined to force Aristide's resignation, but really lacked the means to do so.
Mm-hmm.
The problem now for the opposition is that you have a third force that has crystallized, and that third force is espousing policies and actually using violence, which is unacceptable to the opposition in Port-au-Prince. And in addition, you have a really different sociological population supporting the opposition in Port-au-Prince and the armed, essentially, gangs in Gonaïves. The opposition in Port-au-Prince is composed, it was initially essentially a movement by the elite. What has happened lately, though, is that the opposition has really broadened. So you no longer have just the elite, the middle classes. You have also a significant sector of the lower middle classes. And that was precipitated by the events that took place in early December of last year, when the thugs of Aristide de Chimère penetrated the university and started beating up the students and literally vandalized the university. That became unacceptable to many people who had stood were not participating in the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
So there was real outrage at that. And in addition, you have an economic crisis which is extremely acute, which has always been there, but has become more serious, and it dates back to the days of the embargo against the military. Haiti has never really recovered economically from that period.
This is the embargo of the United States and others.
Yes, and that was a means to put pressure on the military dictatorship to let Aristide come back. Now, when Aristide came back, the economy was in shambles and remains so. And actually, you could argue that the economy has virtually collapsed. So you have a real problem for the government and ultimately for the opposition if it were to take power.
Please go ahead.
I was saying, you see, Jean-Bertrand Aristide ran on a platform that essentially said peace of mind and peace in the belly. The problem is that now you have neither peace of mind nor peace in the belly. So people who supported him are really, to a large degree, disillusioned with the current situation. That doesn't mean that they support the opposition. My firm belief is that the vast majority of Haitians now have become utterly cynical about the political class, whether it be the opposition or the Lavalas movement. And you have significant pockets, who are really either for the opposition or for the government. But the vast majority, I think, is too busy trying to survive in an environment of squalor to bother about politics at the time.
Robert Fatone, let me ask you about this phenom of the leader of Haiti relying on thugs. It's a syndrome we've seen again and again. Now, in the city of Gonaïves, which is about, for people who don't know Haiti so well, about two-thirds up the western coast, a traditional area of trouble for leaders in Port-au-Prince. But the essentially thugs who have taken over there were once Aristide's thugs, chimeras, as you call them, or monsters, and they have flipped against him now. But the president has, we're told, only about 5,000 demoralized police nationally. Why is this leader, why are so many leaders been dependent on goons, on thugs in Haiti?
Well, you have to go back to 1990, 1991. You see, when Aristide was elected, he was elected by the overwhelming majority of Haitians. There was a sense that everything was going to change and change utterly. To put it bluntly, that scared the hell out of the elite. And the elite immediately, even before Aristide became president, started plotting against him. There was actually an attempted coup by Makout forces that was put down by the populations in the slum. When Aristide became president in February of 1991, he didn't last more than 7 months. The army removed him. So you have to understand that Aristide has never, especially after the coup, believed in the loyalty of armed forces or the loyalty of the police. So the strategy, which ultimately is a self-defeating strategy, but I think he believed that by arming gangs in the slums, he would have a significant portion of the population that would be prepared to defend them if a coup were to come. For the very same reason that you have an insurrection in the Gonaïves. So that was a means, as it were,
It may have been his only means. Robert Fatone, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking tonight about Haiti on the verge of coming undone. You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Haiti on the verge of coming undone. You can join our conversation tonight. Have you followed the upheaval in Haiti over the recent months? Does the United States have a responsibility to get involved in Haiti, or should it keep out? And do you blame Aristide for the chaos in Haiti, or is the opposition being unreasonable? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've heard from Port-au-Prince tonight, from reporter Tim Colley there, and we've heard from Robert Fatone, professor of politics at the University of Virginia and author of Haiti's Predatory Republic. We're now joined from Port-au-Prince in Haiti by Franly Julien. He's a leader in the anti-government movement there. Good evening and welcome from Port-au-Prince, Franly Julien.
Good evening. It's a great pleasure for me to intervene today in the show.
It's great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. Please tell us, where does this conflict stand between President Aristide and his opponents in Haiti right now? How do you interpret what's going on?
I must tell you that, first of all, I have to say that even though when President Aristide came to power, I was only 16 years old, but from middle class, I didn't recognize myself in his speech, because for me, President Aristide didn't have a speech that could convince people. So what happened here is that you have a lot of people who used to support him that finally have realized that this guy, this gentleman has no speech, no platform, no program, no political program to develop the country. This is the first thing. And the second thing is that the only speech he had, he has deceived people by not accomplishing it. He was talking about justice, and now our judiciary system is worse than when he came to power.
Franly Julien, and let me ask you, what would you like to see happen at this point? Do you want President Aristide to resign?
I think he has to resign for several reasons. He has to resign, and we have to make through President Aristide an example for this country. It must be clear now in Haiti that when someone come and kill people and get involved in corruption and killings, political killings, this person has to be judged. I think now. We are not fighting only President Aristide, but through President Aristide, we are fighting all the system that he represents.
President Aristide was elected for a term that doesn't end until 2006. He's shown no sign of leaving office. But if he did, what would you like to see follow? New elections? Early elections for president?
No, I don't think we are ready to have elections right now in Haiti. And this is what we've been working on for a while. At the group of 184, we've been promoting a new social contract for Haiti. And this new social contract has to answer to three main questions. And I think that once we can answer to these three questions, we can have a new society. And these three questions are, first of all, how to prevent any political power from taking away sovereignty from the people. The second question is how to include the interests of all the sectors in determining the collective interest.
Okay.
And the third question is how to make people, the Haitian citizen, responsible toward the future of the country. And I think that the fight, the struggle now is not a struggle against a personality. It is a struggle for a new system, it is a struggle against the system we have now that is obsolete.
Finally, Julian, let me ask you, a couple of our guests tonight have described part of the opposition to Jean-Bertrand Aristide as being from Haitian economic and social elites who felt threatened by his economic ideas. Are you part of that class? Are you a well-to-do Haitian who doesn't like the president because of his economic plans, at least as they were once outlined?
I think that was true when he first came on power, but this is not true now, because President Aristide is one of the richest men we've ever had in Haiti now, and his friends are in the very economical elite, actually. So I don't think he has a plan for the poor. He has a plan to destroy rich people just because they are rich. I think he has a plan to destroy any opposent, economic opposent, political opposent, people like this. But I don't think so. I think that now the elites, the different elites we have, the economic elite, the intellectual elite, the social elites, have realized that if President Aristide came to power and if he could remain all this time on the power, they have failed. All the elites have failed, because you can't have someone so clueless for all this time on the power when you have a responsible and open-minded elite in the country.
And let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, friendly Julian. There are reports, as you know, of all kinds of violence going on around the country, particularly in Gonaïves, where anti-Aristide rebels, thugs, are essentially in charge of the town, though it's described as in chaos today. Do you fear civil war or not?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that civil war, we've been dealing with civil war for a while, because what has been happening in Haiti since President Aristide came back into power is civil war in Cité Soleil. And unfortunately, neither national nor international journalists can't go to Cité Soleil because they fear for their lives. But people are getting killed every day in Cité Soleil, and this is civil war. And when what happened in Semag, this is civil war. And if people are attacking, when the thugs are on a daily basis attacking people who are marching against the president, this is civil war. And I think that this is obvious that we fear huge civil type of civil war in Haiti right now. And the last news you must know it is the city of Hench in
yes.
the Central Plateau, which that has been taken by the rebels today. And what we fear now is that you can have different kind of rebels all around the country, and then these people are going to fight against themselves for the national control, for the national power.
So chaos or civil war, we're not sure yet. Friendly Julien, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight from Port-au-Prince.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being with us. Franly Julien, a leader in the opposition to President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, his group, the Group of 184. Robert Faton, what do you hear in this voice of opposition in Haiti tonight?
Well, it's a very interesting phenomenon, because the problem, as I was saying before, is that you may have a proliferation of armed gangs who are just creating hell in the country, but no one controls them. And this is the tragedy of Mr. Aristide, that he may have, in fact, initially created those chimeras in order to protect himself. But what has happened is that those chimeras have become a power unto themselves. They've become a real counterpower to Aristide himself. So you may have a situation where we won't have a classical civil war, but we may have a degradation similar to what we've seen in West Africa, in Sierra Leone or in Liberia. Gang warfare, no one in charge. the country divided between the north and the south. And this is a real possibility now. It's a real danger.
It's a terrible picture as well. Robert Faton, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation tonight, joining us from Brentwood, Maryland, Eugenia Charles Mathurin, co-director of Haiti Reborn, which opposes the overthrow of President Aristide. Good evening and welcome, Eugenia Charles Mathurin.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks for being with us tonight. Also tonight, joining us from Washington, Ariel Jean-Baptiste. She's research associate for the Haiti Democracy Project. She spent 2 weeks in December in Haiti marching in opposition to President Aristide. Good evening and welcome, Ariel Jean-Baptiste.
Good evening. Nice to be here.
Thanks for being with us. Eugenia, if I may, first to you, we've heard a fair bit of criticism of President Aristide this evening. You're supporting him in office. Why?
I must first say I am a co-director of the Quixote Center, and Haiti Reborn is a program of the Quixote Center.
Got it.
We
Good.
Run the Let Haiti Live Coalition for the past 2 years, and our goal is to call for a more just U.S. foreign policy.
Okay.
As a nonprofit organization, we cannot support any political party or nor any particular president in power, but we do support the process of democracy in Haiti. We support the Haitian people's will to choose their own leaders, to go to the poll and choose who's supposed to represent them. That is what we support. We support the will of the Haitian people to get basic health care, education, roads for farmers to be able to find enough equipment to farm their lands so they don't cut down on trees.
So what view of the current political crisis does that leave you taking?
We support the Haitian people. That is that they have fulfilled a constitutional mandate that should end, because that is the only way we can move forward in Haiti. We have had 32 coups d'etats. Just in 1991 alone, the coup killed 5,000 people. Over 100,000 Haitians were forced to take the high seas and become political refugees. And as we see it right now in Haiti, some of the people who spoke earlier are referring to them as thugs and rebels. Jean Tatoune is not a thug or chimé, I will call him. Jean Tatoune was a member of FRAP, and he has just recently been joined by Louis Jodel Chamblain, who was also a member of the FRAP paramilitary group. These are people who had been convicted in the massacre of Rabatou.
We see this just in recent days, the so-called Khmer joining forces, and the Khmer, who do look like thugs, the so-called cannibal army and so on, but joining forces with some of the former military and kind of undercover official thugs in Haiti. But essentially you're saying then Aristide was elected in 2000, his term is to 2006, that's the democratic will of the Haitian people, and it should stay that way.
Yes, definitely, because that is the only way the country can move forward, because otherwise what we're going to have is a full-fledged civil war. As we speak, food aid are not even able to reach Gonaïve or Cap-Haïtien and Port-au-Prince. We have our own reforestation program in Gaumont. And the people, they have also taken the towns of Gaumont. And the people are there. They are being held hostage. And I think these people need to take into consideration. We have people's lives in their hands. They need to take that into consideration. They need to respect the Haitian people's will to vote. The only way Haiti can move forward is by allowing the country a chance to democracy to prevail. Without that, we will never end the cycles of coup after coup and people dying one after the other.
We've got the perspective. Let me turn to Ariel Jean-Baptiste. You have marched in opposition to President Aristide. Should he fill out his term until 2006, or should he go?
First of all, I want to say not only did I march in December, but I just came back from living in Haiti for 17 years.
Understood. Good. Okay.
I want to make sure that people understand that because
this is not a quick visit and back.
No, it's not.
Okay.
I lived the life every day. I worked in Haiti for 17 years and came back last May to the United States because of the situation and the fact that it was deteriorating.
We're glad for the full picture, and thank you for that.
Okay. Well, what was the question? You said
should he serve out his term until 2006? Or in opposing him, are you suggesting he should go early?
Let me say this. I think being president of a country is a privilege. It is not a right. And there are obligations. When you have the Constitution does say 5 years, but it also has other obligations that go with those 5 years. And as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Aristide has not fulfilled those obligations. And does the Constitution say that he can kill people, Mr. Aristide? There's a lot of violations of human rights in Haiti right now. And I think that Mr. Aristide, for the good of the country right now, the polarization that has happened, and it has gotten so bad because of the rebels right now, I think he should resign. And it's not a coup. They're not asking for a coup. A coup is done by a military. We don't have a military in Haiti. The Democratic platform was asking Mr. Aristide to peacefully resign to give Haiti another chance.
Ariel Jean-Baptiste, let me ask you this. What about the forces who now seem aligned with some of these once Aristide and now rebel thugs in central Haiti? They seem to be aligning with some of the old military powers who have a pretty bad reputation themselves. Are you concerned that if Aristide should leave, that sector should come into power again?
Well, that's exactly what happened. The cries, what's happening in Haiti was predicted. The Democratic platform for about 3 months have been yelling peacefully what's happening. Now it's chaos. It's just chaos with what just happened with the rebels. Effectively, what you say is right. We don't know what may happen after he leaves. But the problem is that he's not going to gain back control of the country either. So what do you do then? He's not going to gain control back of the country. He can't. He doesn't have the force for it.
Eugenia Charles Mathurin.
I don't think violently overtaking the country is the way to go about promoting democracy.
But isn't that what's happening in central Haiti right now?
We have a right to an opposition in Haiti, and the opposition has a right to go out and demonstrate. But I don't think people going out and burning school gates to prevent students from going to school is the way to the process of democracy. I don't think working with former soldiers to kill people is the way for democracy. Overtaking police station, burning police station down is not the way to democracy.
Well, and that's exactly what's happening today and even tonight. I want to welcome our callers in. Many have been waiting to join this conversation. Joan is calling from Ottawa, Canada. Good evening and welcome, Jean.
Yes, good evening. I only have 2 points to make.
Yes.
One of them is that I grew up in Haiti, and I just came from 6 weeks in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am observing here is a bunch of people that have no respect for the people who wake up early in the morning to line up in the polls stations to vote. There's a lot of prejudice in Haiti. People who learn how to read and write believe that they have the right to undo whatever peasants and people without shoes decide as their choice.
So are you saying Aristide should stay in because he was elected?
I am saying that the president that the people of Haiti put in power should fill his full term once and for all. The first time, he was only allowed to spend 7 months, and this time he's only in the third year of his 5-year term. And the other thing...
But what about the reports of the violence of his own supporters, his own thugs? Does that give you pause, Jean?
I think that we use the words very loosely when we're talking about black people.
Black people?
They are not thugs. You have a lot of poor people in the neighborhood, just like you have a lot of crime in downtown New York. And politicians use these poor kids that are being manipulated. And another thing I think that is necessary to get out of here is this pretense that this is only just Haitian against Haitian violence. Because the Washington Post of February 2nd, 2001, 5 days before Aristide swore in, reads this: "The most determined of these men, with a promise of anonymity, freely expressed their desire to see the U.S. military intervene once again, this time to get rid of Aristide and rebuild the disbanded Haitian army. That would be the cleanest solution," said one opposition party leader.
But of course, that has not happened.
Train and equip Haitian officers exiled in the neighboring Dominican Republic so they could stage a comeback themselves.
Jean, you've given us a lot to think about. We've got to take a break. We'll come back and look at exactly these issues. We are talking tonight with Robert Fatone, with Eugenia Charles Mathurin, with Ariel Jean-Baptiste about Haiti on the verge of coming undone. Why hasn't democracy taken stronger root in Haiti? And do you fear another wave of Haitians at sea if order is not restored, of more suffering in Haiti? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Haiti on the verge of coming undone. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you remember the 1990s, days of hope for Haiti, the U.S. intervention, the cheers for Aristide. What is the path to resolution there now? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight from Charlottesville, Virginia, by Robert Faton. He's professor and chair of the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia, author of Haiti's Predatory Republic, The Unending Transition to Democracy. From Brentwood, Maryland, by Eugenia Charles Matherin. She is co-director of the Quixote Center, if I've got that right, and of Haiti Reborn. She opposes the overthrow of President Aristide. And from Washington, by Ariel Jean-Baptiste, research associate at the Haiti Democracy Project, 17 years in Haiti. She was back in December. In marching in opposition to Aristide. Robert Faton, we had Jean calling from Ottawa, Canada, just before the break, saying two things. First, this is the elected president. Let him serve out his term. It's disrespect to the people, in his words, the peasant of Haiti, that vote to turn him out. And secondly, that there may be international intervention he's suggesting going on here that does not meet the eye. Your response to each of these?
Well, the first question is really related to, and I think the caller is right when he says that there is a huge class divide in Haiti, and there is indeed a social apartheid in Haiti. On the other hand, I think the tragedy of the Lavalas movement is that when it came to power in 1990-1991, it generated significant hope among the vast majority of the population.
The poor, that is.
The problem, the poor, yes. And there was, as I said, a significant opposition on the part of the elite.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy, though, I think, is that the second coming of Mr. Aristide is certainly not what one might have hoped for. I think there is corruption in the country. I think everyone, you need just to open your eyes, you can see that. Now, that doesn't mean that the president should resign or exit. I think there are ways, possibly, of reaching a compromise. And actually, this is where we have the complete lack of trust between the opposition and Mr. Aristide. Aristide has agreed with CARICOM, the Caribbean countries,
yes,
to do certain things. Now, the opposition is convinced that he will never do those things. But given the situation now, I think the opposition ought to give that opportunity a chance. Otherwise, I think what you may have is a situation which is significantly much worse than the one we have now.
And is there a role for outside intervention here, or beyond making recommendations, should Caribbean countries, should the United States just stay out of it?
Well, but you see, the United States has always been involved in Haiti. The idea that the United States is not involved is a myth.
What's the involvement now?
Well, the involvement now is an involvement that relates, for instance, to funding for the opposition. This is true, too. The opposition, the group of 184, have received money from the National Endowment for Democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. This is a simple fact. Now, that doesn't mean that the opposition, because it receives that kind of support, is an opposition which is not Haitian. The same way that when Aristide came back to the country, he came back on the back of the Marines. So no one is here in a position to really use the nationalist card. This is demagogy. People have to sit down and realize that the country is falling apart, and that ultimately, if there is no compromise, the country will indeed be on the, not just on the brink, but will have a civil war, or even worse, a complete degradation into gang warfare.
President Bush has not expressed much interest in Haiti yet, and yet his brother is governor of Florida, and you know that they're sensitive about the very idea that there might be a flotilla of boat people coming there. Where do U.S. interests lie in Haiti now, Professor?
Well, I think what you have to realize is that we have an election year. Florida is a key state, as we know. If it were for the Bush administration, I think they would want to see Haiti disappear completely. They don't want that headache. This is a real problem, and it has all kinds of racial connotations.
Yes.
My feeling is that the U.S. hopes that what is going to happen is ultimately a compromise between Aristide and the opposition. They support CARICOM, although they, up till very recently it was very ambiguous, because last week we heard, on the other hand, from a so-called senior diplomat in the State Department that the departure of Aristide was part of the possibilities. Now, it seems like the Bush administration has made it clear, insofar as we read Colin Powell's statement, mm-hmm. that regime change is not part of the picture. And I'm convinced that they don't want a regime change in Haiti at the moment. This would be too troublesome. The Bush administration has to deal with Iraq, Afghanistan.
And yet Haiti's not staying quiet. We've got, it seems like half the country in flames, more or less, right now.
Yeah, but you see, I think the contingency plan for the United States, to be very blunt, is to push the boat people, if they do appear, into Guantanamo. There are already contingency plans.
They did it before, they could do it again.
I'm convinced that's what's going to happen, but it may become a political hot potato for the Bush administration.
Let me try and get one more call here. Cindy's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi. I was part of a group called the International Coalition for Independent Observers, and we had a presence in every election of 2000. I wanted to give a little bit of context
in Haiti,
the so-called contested election, presidential election, in which Aristide, by the way, was the only one with a fully developed party platform. And the major point was that the contested election wasn't his presidential election, but rather the contested part.
The parliamentary
the
election.
2000 election.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal was that out of over 5,000 elections throughout the country on all levels, only 8 of the senatorial elections were contested. And in fact, very shortly after, Aristide assured the resignation of all 8 of them.
So what are you suggesting, that this is being overblown in an attempt to push him out, Cindy?
Absolutely, because we've seen, and in fact, the opposition from the very start has said that they have a zero movement policy. They won't give an inch. They won't give a budge. They've absolutely stalled and haven't budged one little bit. Compromise is not in their vocabulary whatsoever. The only reason why the opposition person from Haiti said that Haiti is not ready for elections, according to Group 184, is because they know they won't win elections.
Cindy, we've got it, and we're short of time here, but thank you for your call. Ariel Jean-Baptiste, there's a voice that says, come on, give the man a chance, let him serve out his term.
Let me tell you what happened with the elections in 2000. First of all, the Electoral Council that presided over Mr. President Aristide's election was illegal. The president of the Electoral Council had to flee the country because he feared for his life, because they wanted him, President Préval and President Aristide wanted him to sign off on those elections. So if you tell me if these elections are legal, if the president of the council is living right near you in New Hampshire, he's in exile, you tell me if these elections were legal. The international community went ahead and practically recognized Aristide, but Aristide is not a legitimate president.
Okay. Eugenia Charles-Mather, and the last word goes to you. We've just got a few more seconds here. Do you think he'll succeed in hanging in till 2006?
I think he should stay and finish his term. The Haitian people voted him in, and he needs to finish his term. That's the best wish for the Haitian people. We need democracy to prevail in Haiti and not people overthrowing government violently.
Right now, what we seem to have is chaos, but we will keep an eye on it, and we thank all of you for joining us tonight. Eugenia Charles-Mather in Brentwood, Maryland tonight, Ariel Jean-Baptiste in Washington, and Professor Robert Faton in Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you all for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a look at one of the sport's most improbable comeback stories ever, golfer John Daly's victory yesterday afternoon. This is On Point. Golfer John Daly pulled off one of the more remarkable comeback stories in sports history yesterday, winning the Buick Invitational for his first PGA victory in nearly 9 years. After bursting onto the scene as one of golf's bright young stars in the early 1990s, Daly's struggles have become legendary. 3 ex-wives, 2 trips to alcohol rehab, trashed hotel rooms, hard life in a trailer, and outbursts on the golf course. But yesterday, he triumphed over many of golf's greatest players, including Tiger Woods, birdieing a sudden-death playoff hole to seal the victory and more than $850,000. John Feinstein is a sports writer and commentator for NPR. I asked him just how improbable Daly's victory yesterday was.
Tommy was ranked 299th in the world going in, so that means that, at least statistically speaking, just about every guy in the 144-man field would have been considered more likely to win the event than John. Pretty much the same thing that happened the last time he won a tournament in the British Open in 1995 when he was ranked, I believe it was 129th in the world and won a major championship. So the answer, in short, is very, very unlikely.
9 years since that British Open win. Take us through some of the turmoil that John Daly has lived in those 9 years.
It would take close to 9 years to take you through it, Tom. He was, at that time, on the wagon, not drinking. Soon thereafter, he started drinking again. He ended up in rehab once more after a terrible incident with his then-wife in Florida a couple of years later. He came back from rehab and said that he was going to stay dry. That lasted about a year. Then there was another divorce. Then he said he was going to drink again because he couldn't stay dry. He has maintained that stance since then. His golf essentially fell off the planet. And last year, at times, he was actually selling memorabilia out of the back of his RV to try to make money because between his divorces and gambling debts and loss of sponsors, he was essentially broke.
Two divorces, rehab, trashed hotel rooms, and yet the normally staid golf crowds seem to love John Daly. They seem to be willing him on to victory yesterday. What is it about him that makes him a crowd favorite?
Well, there's a couple things, Tom. First of all, he's a genuinely nice guy. John Daly does not have a mean bone in his body. He's very popular with his fellow pros. He's very generous with people, probably too generous sometimes given his financial situation. But I also think that all fans in all sports relate to the struggle of the athlete. And as we just discussed, no one has struggled more on or off the golf course in the last few years than John Daly. I think Phil Mickelson has become more popular in recent years because golf fans perceive that he is struggling to win a major championship, which he hasn't yet won. Tiger Woods probably is somewhat less popular with many fans because there is no struggle in his life. He wins, he's wealthy, he has a beautiful fiance. John Daly is the struggle, and I think people relate to that.
I guess he's also in some way the everyman. I mean, this is no health nut. He packs some extra pounds around that course. And I'm told by friends who have seen him play, he's got a cigarette just off the TV camera view almost all the time.
Right. It's against the rules of the PGA Tour to be seen smoking on camera. And John's certainly not the only player who smokes, but they all know, you know, when the camera's on them, they'll put their hand behind their back or they'll cup the cigarette so that it won't be on camera, or they'll get the cameraman to shoot them waist up while they hold the cigarette down below where it will be seen. But yeah, John smokes, and, you know, John looks like the kind of guy who would go have a beer with you, and he is the kind of guy who would go have a beer with you, and you know what? You'd have a good time with him when he did.
So how did he do it yesterday at the Buick Invitational? Up against Tiger and a lot of great talent, how did John Daly pull it out?
Well, there was a little bit of luck involved because the wheels were coming off there on the back nine. He ended up shooting 75, which is the highest final round by a winner on tour since 1991. So there was certainly a little bit of luck involved there. But the thing you have to remember about John Daly is his victories, winning the PGA 1991, the British Open, as we discussed, 1995, were not flukish in any way. Not just because he hits the ball as long as anybody who's ever played the game, but when he is on his game, he has a wonderful short game. And you saw that in the playoff when he made that remarkable shot from the bunker 100 feet from the flag, and he knocked it to about 4 inches for the birdie that ultimately gained him the victory. When he is concentrating, when he is feeling good about himself and about his game, John Daly has about as much talent as anyone this side of Tiger Woods.
And now he's got $864,000 in his pocket, a lot of fresh support and a triumph here. You've watched him for a long time, John. Do you think that John Daly can stay on the rails, or is this a guy who's always going to fall off, go through the weeds, and come back up?
I think the latter is more likely, Tom. As I said, it's never easy for John, and he is one of those people, if you go back through his history, where his greatest failures come after his greatest successes. He couldn't handle the microscope that he was under after he won the PGA and leapt to stardom in 1991. He started drinking again shortly after he won the British Open in 1995. John tries. I've spent a lot of time with John, and I know he wants to do the right things. He's got children he cares about tremendously. He understands how much the public cares about him, but sometimes it's just too hard. And I hope that this is the start of good things for John Daly, but I certainly wouldn't want to bet my house on it.
Well, we'll knock wood for him. It would take a hard heart not to have been rooting for him yesterday. It was a great thing to watch.
Yeah, it certainly was, and I'll knock wood right now for him, Tom. I agree with you.
Great. John Feinstein, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
John Feinstein is a sports writer and commentator for NPR. He's the author of the forthcoming Caddy for Life, the Bruce Edwards story. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.